We are on Alice. We're holding on them. Alice Ahmed Bey's three lines from the bottom. We discussed yesterday. The Mishnah
You're
said that
very
after the
distant, very,
what?
very muffled.
It should be the same as always. I'm the same distance from Mike as the other days. We learned yesterday that after the Kohen Gadol did the girdle on the two on the two goats, Lashem and Lazazel, so then we said he took a strip of red wool, a ribbon of red wool, and tied it around the head of the Sar Lazazel in order that we don't mix it up with any other goats that are there. We said also that he ties. We said also that they do something with the Sar Lashem. We said in the Gemara two possibilities. Does it mean that they place the Sar Lashem in the part of the Azara where it's going to be shechted, or does it mean that they also put a piece of red wool around its neck where it's going to be shechted? The Gemara actually concluded that they do put a piece of red wool around its neck, but whether that's the maskana of the Gemara is not so simple. In fact, the Rambam, when he brings this halacha, doesn't mention that point at all. He just says that they put it keneged beis shchitasei, which may imply that he holds that in fact they didn't mark the Sar Lashem in any way. They just put it in its appropriate part of the Azara. Whatever the case, the point is they put a red ribbon on the Sar Lazazel to mark it. So then we mentioned that there's another case in the Torah where we have to use a red string, a piece of strip of red wool for something. Namely, when we're preparing the Parah Adumah, the Torah tells us you have to throw into the fire there a piece of cedar wood, a piece of azov, and a strip of red wool. So we discussed yesterday about about these two strips. Do one or both of them have to have a minimum size? So we said the one for the Sar Lazazel on the face of it has to have a certain minimum size because eventually we're going to be cutting it in two. Eventually, after and when we learn in the sixth parak about the guy takes the Sar to the cliff to Azazel. So it says over there that he takes the strip of wool and divides it in two, and half of it he puts on the head of the animal, and half of it he ties to a rock nearby. So that one on the face of it should require a certain minimum size in order to be able to have enough size to be able to do that. Whereas the one that was throwing into the Parah Aduma, into the fire, maybe not necessarily. But then we said, on the other hand, it needs to be heavy enough to actually fall into the fire rather than getting burnt in the air, in the fire, in the flames of fire in the air above the Parah Aduma. So we discussed this, so we discussed that point. So now we're going to continue on that point about these various strips of red wool. So the Gemara says, Ki Oseh Rav Dimi. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Amar Rav Yechanan, he reported in the name of Rav Yechanan, Shalosh Lashonis Shamaiti. Now, before we had Rav Yitzchak saying Shtei Lashonis Shamaiti, he said, I heard from Meir Rabbeim about two cases involving red wool, the Sar Lazozo and the Parah Aduma. Now Rav Yechanan says, actually, there are three that we have to take into consideration. Achas Shel Parah, one that they throw into the fire when they're burning the Parah Aduma, the Achas Shel Sar HaMishtaleach, another one that they put on the head of the Sar HaMishtaleach, as we said in our Mishnah, and the Achas Shel Metzora, and the third one is the one that has to be used in the process of purifying the Metzora. At the beginning of Parshas Metzora, the Torah tells us that the first stage of the Tahara of a Metzora involves that you take two birds, an Eitz Erez, an Ezev, and Shnitei Las, and water, and you shecht one of the birds, and you dip the other things into the mixture of water and blood. So there also you need a strip of red wool. And Rabbi Yechanan said, now Tosfos points out, what about the one for the Sar Lashem? So Tosfos says, because that one was needed only just so it doesn't get mixed up with other animals, so that for sure doesn't have any minimum shear. You just need something large enough to be able to notice. There are the one with the Sar Lazazel, the one with the Sar Lazazel. Now it's true, it's meant in order to recognize the animal, in order not to mix it up with other ones. But as we're going to say, it also had the purpose that if the Jewish people are doing what they're supposed to and they did tshuva, then a nes happens and it turns white. So you need a certain amount of it in order to be able to notice that it turned white. You want people to be able to notice the nes, and therefore you need a certain minimum amount to it. Again, though, there are other Mefarshim who learn that maybe in the end, that maybe Rabbi Yechanan over here is actually arguing with the conclusion of the Gemara before that said that we do actually tie a strip of red wool onto the Sar Lashem. And they say maybe not. Maybe it means maybe Rabbi Yochanan is disagreeing with that and saying that you just place the Seir Lashem in the appropriate part of the Azara, but you don't actually tie a ribbon around it. Okay, anyway. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying that there are three other ones that have a shear. And he says, each one, I learned a shear for them, but I don't remember which one is which. Achas mishkal asara zuz, one of them has to weigh 10 zuzim. Va'achas mishkal shnei sloyim, the second one has to weigh 2 sloyim. There are 4 zuz in a sela, so that equals 8 sloyim, 8 zuzim. Va'achas mishkal shekel, the third one has to weigh a minimum of a shekel. A shekel is a half a sela, so 2 zuzim. So 10, 8, and 2 respectively. The aim of a farish, but Rabbi Yochanan says, I'm not sure which is which. I can't explain. Of these three, the Parah Aduma, the Seir LaAzazel, and the Taanis Metzorah, which one has to be larger, which one has to be smaller, and which one has to be the smallest? Ki also Robin, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, Pirshmish made it Rabbi Yonasan, and he explained in the name of Rabbi Yonasan what it is, to clarify which one is which. Shall Parah Mishkal Asara Zuz, the one used for the Parah Aduma, has to weigh 10 Zuz. And the reason is because we said before in the Gemara that that one needs to be heavy enough to actually fall into the fire rather than just getting burnt in the tongues of flame above the Parah Aduma. Now, we did say before in the Gemara that we brought the possibility that maybe the same Rabbi Yonasan says that you don't necessarily need COVID. It doesn't necessarily need to be heavy enough to fall into the fire. It might be fine anyway because it's going to be wrapped up with the other two things. It's used to wrap up the eight Zedas and Azev, and the three of them together will be heavy enough. But Tosfos says that. Tosfos says, the fact is we had another answer in the Gemara, that there's a difference in the shape of the fire, whether it's vertical or horizontal. So we could say that Rabin holds according to that answer. Or he goes on to say that maybe over here, we're talking according to, maybe both of these opinions are in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Maybe we have over here in the Gemara, Mishmeid Rabbi Yonasan. Maybe it's supposed to be Mishmeid Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, anyway. So the one of the Parah Aduma has to be the heaviest of all, because it has to actually fall into the fire. The one sent with the Seir LaAzazel, which is eventually going to need to be broken up into two pieces, that one needs to be 2 sloyim. That way each piece will be a sela. Now, why should it need to be that much? Why shouldn't it be able to be, for example, that's a sela and you divide it up and each one is a shekel? So Tosfos Yeshanim asks the question and says, I don't know why. Well, maybe just he learned the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim that you need that. It needs to be 2 sloyim. So one answer, in fact, is that, again, since we said before that you want it to be large enough to be noticeable, that it turned white, then maybe that's it. Maybe that's the minimum amount that the Chachamim figured out, that it's going to be really noticeable. There is an interesting idea that I saw in the name of the Maharil Diskin that he says 2 sloyim, we find, is also the amount of something extra that Yaakov gave Yosef with the Ksonis Pasim that made the other brothers jealous of him. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that don't favor one child over the other, because you see, because of 2 sloyim that Yaakov favored Yosef, then they wound up selling Yosef, and we all ended up going down to Mitzrayim. The point being, in other words, the 2 sloyim, does it mean the whole garment weighed 2 sloyim? Does it mean the sleeves weighed 2 sloyim? That itself, you have an argument. But whatever the case, the Gemara associates it with 2 sloyim. The sir, la'azazel, one of the purposes when you bring a sir as a carbon, okay, in this case, it's the sir la'azazel, not as a carbon, but still, one of the ideas of it is to ask for kapara for selling Yosef, because after all, Yosef's sale is associated with a goat. They shechted a goat and dipped the coat in the blood. We have in last week's parasha, Rashi mentions in connection with the korbanos of the Nesiim that when they brought a goat, it was the chaper on the chilas Yosef. So therefore, there's an association between 2 sloyim and a goat, and therefore we have over here 2 sloyim. And the idea would be, in other words, if it turns white, then it shows that year Hashem forgave them for the sale of Yosef and the lack of Avos Yisrael that showed. Okay, so that's the Seir LaAzazel. The third one, Rishon Metzorah, Mishkal Shekel, the third one is the one for the Metzorah. That one is the least of all. That one only has to weigh a shekel, because after all, that one, we're not really, all we're doing with that one is we're dipping it into the mixture of blood and water. So therefore, if that one's small, then it doesn't matter. We don't really need it to be that big in the first place. We don't need it to fall into a fire. We don't need to rip it up. Therefore, it can be the smallest. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yechon and Pligi Bar Rav Shimon ben Chalafta v'Rabbanan b'Parah. Now, when it comes to the Parah Aduma, Rav Shimon ben Chalafta and the Rabbanan argue what's the amount that you need for the Parah Aduma. So before we said in the name of Rav Yonason, Robin told us in the name of Rav Yonason that for the Parah Aduma we need 10 zuz, which is 2.5 slayim. Now we're saying that actually there's a machlokes. Chad Amar Mishkal Asara v'Chad Amar Mishkal Shekel. One says it has to be 10 zuz, and the other one says it has to be only a shekel, which is 2 zuz. The simonach, and the way to remember that they argued only on those two numbers, neither one said it was the middle amount, think of the expression in the Mishnah at the end of Menachos, echad amarba ve'echad amamit, whether a person brings a large korban or a small one, either way, Hashem appreciates it, or vavadshi chavanes libel shemayim, as long as he has kavana, that he's doing it in honor of Hashem. The point being, that expression, echad amarba ve'echad amamit, can help us remember that here we have a machloikas involving davka the marba and the mamit. Davka the one says 10, one says 2, and nobody says the middle of amount 8. On the other hand, Amalei Rav Yumi and Midifti L'Ravina, but Rav Yumi and Midifti told Ravina, no, it's not that they were arguing that Loi B'Parah Pligi. In fact, they were not arguing about the Parah Adumah, about the 10 and 2 respectively. They were arguing Ela B'Sur and Mashtaleach Pligi. They were actually arguing over the Sur La'Zazel. Does the strip of wool for it need to be 10 zuz or only a shekel, which is 2 zuz? And he continues, Vahu Yoima, you should know that that day when Rav Shimon ben Chalafta and the Chachamim were arguing about that, Noch Nafshe de Rabbi Bar Kisi, Rabbi Bar Kisi, one of the Chachamim, passed away that day. V'anchu bo simana, so they used that as a simon to help us remember. So Rav Yumi Yemidifti is telling Ravina that we can remember as a simon that they were arguing about the Sur La'Zazel that day, that Rabbi Bar Kisi mechapek Sur Mishtaleach. The Ptira of the Tamar Chacham, of the Tzaddik, Rabbi Bar Kisi, is Mechaper, just like the Sur La'Zazel is Mechaper. We know that Mrs. Tzaddikim Mechaper, in fact, you have Rashi brings from Gemara in Moed Katan, it mentions the Big Dick Kahuna, and right after that, it mentions about Aaron's sons passing away, at the beginning of Parashas Achrimos, Shnei B'nei Aaron, and Hashem tells Moshe to tell Aaron to wear the big kahuna to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So that teaches you the big kahuna are mechaper, and so is Mrs. Tzaddikim. So this helps us remember also that on the day that Rabbi Bar Kisi passed away, they were talking about the Sur La'Zazel, which also provides kapara. Actually, Tosfos Yeshanim says, I mean, that's not really that much of a good simon. I mean, after all, the Parah Aduma also, to a certain extent, brings kapara. In fact, the Gemara there mentions also Lomanismacha Missus Miriam Parashas Parah. Why is the death of Miriam mentioned right next to the Parah Aduma? And the reason is the same thing. Ma Parah Mechaperes Af Missus Tzaddikim Mechaper. You have a Igeres Chofches in Tanya. The Alter Rebbe explains the deeper idea of what's the connection of the kapara of the Parah Aduma to Mrs. Tzaddikim. But over here, the fact is, Tosfos Yeshanim says that, first of all, one possibility is, look, we know that it was the Sur La'Zazel, so this way it helps us remember. But another thing also, the Parah Aduma fundamentally is there for the purpose of Tara. I mean, the reason why Hashem said, Davka, to take a Parah Aduma and do the whole thing with it, is because it provides Kapara as well. But fundamentally, what are you doing a Parah Aduma for? Not so much to bring Kapara, but in order to have ashes to be able to be Matahar, a person of his stomach. Whereas the Sur La'Zazel, its primary purpose is Kapara. So therefore it's more of a sin. It's possible somebody suggested also maybe the Gemara is making sort of an association between the Samach of Kisi and the Sin of Sur, Rabia Bar Kisi and Seir HaMishtaleach. Maybe. Anyway. Okay. So that's that then. So there is a machloikas. However, we had Rav Yonason saying straight out what it is, that the one for the Parah Aduma has to be the heaviest, the one for the Sur La'Zazel, the next heaviest, and the one for the Metzorah, the lightest of all, and that is indeed how the Rambam paskins them in their respective places. So 10 zuz for the Parah Aduma, so it actually falls into the fire, 8 zuz, 2 sloyim for the Sarda Meshaleach, so you have it's large enough that you can divide it in two, and it'll still be large strips. And a shekel for the Metzarda, because that one just has to be dipped into the water and blood, and therefore we don't care if it's small. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about when we say ten zuz or two sloyim or whatever. We're not talking about the value of it. We're talking about the weight of it. Right. Okay. Well, so in the case of the Parah Adumah, we don't want it to burn up in the air. In the case of the Sarah Lazozo, we want it to be large enough that we can rip it in two. And yeah. Okay. Onward. Since we started the sugya by Rabbi Yitzchak saying there are two strips of red wool, and then one by the Parah Adumah and one by the Sarah Lazozo, and I'm not sure which one. We said one needs a shear, one not, and I'm not sure which is which. So now the Gemara digresses with something else where Rabbi Yitzchak says something about the Parah Adumah and one of the Korbanos of Yom Kippur. And again, we're going to discuss a contrast or a similarity between them. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Shtei Shchitis Shamaiti, I heard from my Rebbeim that there are two Shchitis of bulls that we have to discuss. Achas Shal Parah V'Achas Shal Parroi, one of the Parah Adumah, the other one of the Par of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. So far, we had in our Mishnah, we had the Kohen Gadol doing the video on it. We didn't have him shechting it yet. That's going to be late. That's going to be in the next Mishnah. So the two shechites chad achas ksheira bezor v'achas psula bezor. One of them is kosher. Rabbi Yitzchok says, I learned from my Rebbeim, one of them is kosher even if a zor does it. V'achas psula bezor. The other one is possible if a zor does it. V'lo yadina heiminayhu, but I don't know which is which. Now, when we say a zor over here, in the case of Yom Kippur, because the Kohen Gadol has to do the whole avoda, then a zor would mean anybody who's not the Kohen Gadol. Oh. In the case of the Parah Adumah, we're going to discuss on Amud Beis. Does the Parah Adumah have to be done? Now, the first Parah Adumah in the Midbar, the Torah tells us it had to be done by Elazar HaKohen. At the time, he was the Sgan. Aaron was the Kohen Gadol. So Elazar was the Sgan. He was the deputy Kohen Gadol. Later on, on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to discuss what about Paras Adumas in future generations. Do those have to be done by the Kohen Gadol, or can those be done by any regular Kohen? So if we say they have to be done by the Kohen Gadol, then a Zor over here would again mean anybody who's not the Kohen Gadol. If we say that a regular Kohen can do a later Paras Adumas, then it would mean a Zor would be any non-Kohen. Of course he's allowed to go with the machna. I mean, he doesn't have to. He's not under house arrest in Yerushalayim. No, the Rambam does say that the Kohen Gadol is tiferes for him, that he should stay in Yerushalayim as much as possible. But he's not also to go outside Yerushalayim. Okay. So Rabbi Yitzchak is saying again that we have these two shchitas, one where a zor is kosher to do it, and the other one where a zor is not kosher to do it. And I'm not sure which is which. So the Gemara says Itmar. So we have a discussion of Amiroyim about that. Shchitas poro poroi, Rabu Shmuel. So Rab and Shmuel argue about it. Chad Amar poro psula poroi ksheira, v'chad Amar poroi psula poroi ksheira. One says that the Parah Adumah would be possible if it was shechted by a zor, but the power of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur would be kosher if it was shechted by a zor. A zor over here meaning, again, anybody other than the Kohen Gadol. V'chadama, and the other one says the other way around. Paroi psula, if the Kohen Gadol's power on Yom Kippur is shechted by anybody else, then it would be possible. But if the Parah Adumah is shechted by somebody else, then it would be kosher. So now, which one said which? Tistayim, we can conclude, the Rabu d'ama Parah psula, that Rab is the one who says that the Parah Adumah, if it was shechted by a zor, would be possible, which means, therefore, he's the one who says that if the Kohen Gadol's power was shechted by a zor, then it would be kosher. How can we prove that? The Amar Rav Zeira, Shchitas Parah Bezor Psula, because Rav Zeira says that, and Rav Zeira says, and in fact, Agoris Hagra adds, Omar Rab, that he says it in the name of Rab, that Shchitas Parah Bezor Psula, that if the Parah Adumah is shechted by a zor, then it will be possible. V'omer Rav Allah, and Rav explains on it, why is it possible if it's done by a zor? Because el ozer v'chukah sheninuba. Because when it comes to the Parah Adumah, the Pasuk says you should give the Parah Adumah to el ozer akoyin, and later on it says zois chukas atorah, And it says at the beginning, Zois Chukas HaTorah, and at the end it says, V'hoysa lachem l'chukas olam. Whenever it says chukah, it means it must be done this way. Therefore, it means every detail over there has to be done that way. And that means, therefore, Elazar. So in the case of the original one, it meant Davka had to be the Skan. And in the case of any other one, it meant it had to Davka, it has to Davka be the Kohen. Again, whether the Kohen Gadol or the Kohen Hed, yet that we're going to discuss on other days, but whatever, that can't be a Zor, because it says Elazar. So therefore, we can see that Rav is the one who says that if the Parah Adumah is shechted by a Zor, then it's possible. Which, by the way, Tosfos Yeshanim says, in that case, if we say it has to be done by a Kohen, then it would mean he also has to wear big dikona, and it would also be that other Meforshim explain, it would also mean he'd have to do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim first. Yeah, you can wear the begadim outside, yeah. Yeah, actually, it does say that I think the Sifri says that even if it's the Kohen Gadol doing it, he wears only four big dikahuna like on Yom Kippur. But it doesn't matter anyway. Yeah, we're going to discuss later in the Masechta whether you're allowed to wear the big dikahuna outside the Bais Mikdash. In general, no, but if you have to, you know, in this case, the Torah tells you to. Okay. Anyway. So that's where Rav gets that if the Parah Adumah is shechted by a Zor, then it's possible. Again, Zor, for this purpose, we're going to have to figure out later whether that means anybody other than the Kohen Gadol or anybody who's not a Kohen. Okay, so the question is, but Rav, well, then according to Rav's opinion, my shna Parah dichtiv alazav achukah, then why is Rav telling us that dafka by the Parah Adumah, it has to be that the Kohen or the Kohen Gadol shechts it, is dichtiv alazav achukah? You're telling me because it says alazav hakohen, and it says chukah, and we said that whenever it says chukah, means it has to be done exactly this way. Nu, Parah nami, well, you should say the same thing as far as the power of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, hoksiv aaron b'chukah. There also, the Pasuk says at the beginning, it says over there, v'hikriv aaron as parachat asher shaloi, v'shochat as parachat asher shaloi. At the end, it says, v'hoysa lachem l'chukah asolam. So the same rule should apply. It says aaron, it says chukah, therefore it means only the Kohen Gadol. Where is Rav getting from that if the power of the Kohen Gadol is shechted by somebody else, then b'dievet it's kosher? The answer is, Rav's going to answer, shchita lav avoida. No, shchita is not an avoida. So therefore, yes, it does say chukah, but it means the other details of the avoida of Yom Kippur have to be done by the Kohen Gadol. Shchita not being an avoida, if the Kohen Gadol doesn't do it, it doesn't matter. Now, in what sense is shchita not an avoida? So Tosfos brings over here an explanation that Rashi says elsewhere that it's because shchita is kosher with a zor does it. In general, with karbanos, we know that a zor can't do the avoidus of other karbanos, but if he shechts a karban, then it's kosher. So therefore it's not considered an avoida. Tosfos gets into some discussion about that.
It's a circular logic.
Tosfos gives, which actually Rashi himself says
Alexander.
In some places. Yeah.
It's a very circular logic to say that what? The shchita it can be done by a zar, and therefore it's not an avoda. Who knows what's the reason why shchita can be done by a zar?
Well, the bottom line is we know that avoda in the Bais Mikdash cannot be done by a zar. So if we're telling if we're being told by other korbanos, forget for a second about the power of Yom Kippur, by other korbanos and oila, achatos, etc. Who can do Kabbalah? Who can receive the blood in the Mizrach? Who can walk it over to the Mizbeach? Who can sprinkle on the Mizbeach? Only a Kohen, obviously. If a non-Kohen does it, then okay, we discussed earlier in the Masechta what he's Chayiv Misa for, what he's not Chayiv Misa for, but it's definitely possible. If a Zor does the Kabbalah, for example, if it's possible, then it's possible. So if we're saying that a Zor can do the Shchita, obviously that means the Shchita is not an Avoda.
Are we saying blankly that the Zar can do the Shchita? We're saying nothing.
In other words, Rav is saying like this: given that we know in general Shchita is not an Avoda, therefore, even here by Yom Kippur, even though the Torah is telling us the word Chukah, which therefore should mean that everything that's told in this parasha has to be done exactly as it says, meaning by the Kohen Gadol, but necessarily that would refer only to Avodas. Shchita being defined as not an avoda, it wouldn't be in that category. So now that's what I was saying. As Tosfos discusses, in what sense are we saying that shchita is not an avoda? Rashi elsewhere says because it's cheder bezor, although Tosfos asks on that. Another possibility is because shchita you have to do even by cholin. None of the other avoidas. You don't do kabbalah sadam by cholin. You can just let the blood spill on the ground. You don't walk it over to the mizbeach. You don't sprinkle it on the mizbeach. Only by kodesh. shouldn't eat these things. Therefore, right, shchita, you do by chulin just in order to eat them. So that's another reason. And then Tosfos brings a Tosfos. Okay. So those are various reasons to say Tosfos brings another reason because the shochet technically could stand outside the azara, whereas the makabel has to stand inside the azara. Okay. So the point is, in other words, there are various reasons to say shchita is not an avoda. Therefore, Rav can say just because it says chukah at the end of the parasha, it doesn't mean to apply it to shchita. It means to apply it to the other avodas after that, the ones that anyway throughout the year have to be done by a regular kohen. So therefore, on Yom Kippur, they have to be definitely be done by the kohen gadol. So then,
what's
the question is,
reason shchita is not an avoda? What's the main reason shchita is not an avoda?
So the question is,
what's the main reason shchita is not an avoda? The main reason.
That's what Tosfos was discussing. What's the main reason? Is because it's primarily done by a zor. Is it because it can be done by a zor? Therefore, obviously, by definition, it's not an avoda. Is it because it's done by other kodshim as well, by other animals as well, even chulin? So it's not something unique to kodshim. Or is it because the person who's shechting doesn't even have to be standing inside the azara? That's what I just said. Let's go on. So the question is, Yehochi Pora Nami, nu, then you should say the same thing about the Pora Adruma as well. Also, you should say the Shchita of it is not an Avoida, so it should be kosher with a Zor. And yet, Rav is telling us by the Pora Adruma, the Shchita must be done by the Koyin or by the Koyin Gadol. The answer is, Shiny Pora to Kodshe Bedek Abayasi. The difference is, the Pora Adruma is not a Korban, it's Kodshe Bedek Abayas. It's bought out of funds of Bedek Abayas, bought out of funds that were donated to the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash, but it's not a korban. It's not being brought in the Beis HaMikdash at all. It's being brought on Harazesim. So the Gemara asks, if a lav kol dekein hu, nu, shouldn't you make a kabel choymer? If even, in other words, the korban adumah doesn't have kedushas hamizbech, it only has kedushas domim. So therefore, so there's no avoida versus non-avoida. Everything with it is the same. The Gemara asks, why? If a lav kol dekein hu, shouldn't you make a kabel choymer? If you're going to tell me that even by the pyre korban gadol, which has kedushas aguf, you don't need a koyin to shecht it. How much more so the Pora Adruma, which doesn't even have kedushas and guf? The answer is, Amar of Shisha Bredin of Idi, Midi to have Amaras Negoyim. Nu, you know what? The Pora Adruma, the shechting of it, you could compare it to, for example, something which is not an avoda at all. Let's say seeing Negoyim and determine, seeing Tsaras and determining whether the person or the clothing or whatever is Tomei or Tohar. Where the lava voidahi, now we know that's not an avoida, it doesn't take place anywhere near the Beis HaMikdash, or boya kahuna, but yet xeris hakosuv, that it requires a kohen. So by the same token, we could say the shchita of the Pora Adruma is not an avoida, and in fact, nothing with the Pora Adruma itself is not even a korban. Xeris hakosuv, that it requires a kohen to shecht it, Rav will say. You're going to make a kabel choymer, but the fact is, you could make the same kabel choymer with maris negoyim as well, and you don't, the Torah tells us that those have to be seen by a kohen. So therefore, the same thing would be true as far as the shchita of the Pora Adruma. Tosfos, by the way, brings an interesting point also why we would say, now we said before, Shmuel says, and the Gemara is going to discuss now, about why we might say that the Kohen Gadol himself has to shecht his par, whereas when it comes to the Pora Adruma, maybe not. Didn't we just said before, shchita ksheda bazar. On the other hand, maybe what it is the Kohen Gadol is the owner of this par. Remember, unlike all the other korbanos of Yom Kippur, which are bought from public money, the par and also the ayil, the Kohen Gadol buys out of his own money. So maybe the Torah is insisting that he, being the owner of the animal, has to be the one to shecht it. Whereas by other korbanos, you wouldn't necessarily have that. So anyway, so that explains Rav's shita then. When it comes to the Pora Adruma, since it says chukah. Since it's chukah, then it means everything has to be done the same way. The Pora Adruma is not a korban that we should distinguish between the shchita and the other things of it. Therefore, we can say gzeiras hakosev that everything in it has to be done by a kohen or the kohen gadol, respectively. Whereas the power of Yom Kippur, which is a korban like any other korban, then the usual rules of korbanos apply to it. Any other korban shechted by a zor is kosher. Therefore, this one would also be okay. What about all the Shmuel de Amar Pora Ipsula? What about according to Shmuel's opinion now, who says that if the par kohen gadol was shechted by anybody else, then it's possible. So now, and he says that if the Pora Adruma was shechted by somebody else, then it's kosher. So we have to ask the other way around. Maishna Pora Dichtib Aaron V'chukah. So why is it different by Pora Shmuel is telling us because it says Aaron and Chukah, and unlike Rab, Shmuel is going to say that the word Chukah refers to the Shchita as well. Therefore, he's going to say that, yes, usually we would say Shchita is not an Avoda, but here, since it says Chukah at the end of a parasha that mentions the Shchita as well, then it means the Shchita has to be done by the Kohen Gadol also. Well then, Paranami Yoksiv Alaza V'Chukah. Nu, by the Paradrum, it also says Alaza, and it says Chukah. So why, according to him, is the Paradrum a kosher if it's Shechted by a Zor? The answer is shiny hossam. Shmuel would answer because there it's different. The pasuk says he should shecht it in front of him. Now that means somebody else is shechting it in front of him. So it means that a zor is doing the shechita and a lazar is watching it happen. So therefore, so in other words, so Shmuel says the pasuk itself is implying that somebody else is doing the shechita. Otherwise, it would say when a satam lazar akoin v'shochat oisa. That it says v'shachat oisa l'fonav implies Elazar is watching it being done and somebody else is doing the shechita. Well, there you go. Somebody else is doing it. And that somebody else, it doesn't say has to be a kohen. There you go then. The Zohar can do it. V'rav, so what does Rav answer to that? He says shalo yasiach daitin mena. The word l'fonav doesn't mean that somebody else shechts it. It means it has to be l'fonav. He has to be concentrating on it the whole time. He cannot have hesach hadas while he's shechting or while he's doing the other avodas with it. Hesach hadas during the process of preparing the parah aduma makes it possible. So most other karbanos, if you have hesach hadas, it doesn't matter so much. I mean, you're not allowed to have a machshava. You're not allowed to have a wrong machshava, a machshava of chutz mana or chutz koyma or whatever. But you don't have to be concentrating on it the whole time. You could be doing it and meanwhile thinking of something else and it's still kosher. But by the parah aduma, the Torah is telling us you have to have So Rav will say that's what the word Lefonav is teaching us. In fact, it's interesting that Ashbam on the Pasuk explains that the Shochat Oysa Lefonav on a Pshat level could mean, Lefonav would mean in front of Aaron. Aaron himself is not preparing the first part Adrama. One reason it says about that, the Torah tells us Elazar has to do it. One reason it says about that is because, since I think Rashi mentions it in the Pasuk, since Aaron himself made the eagle, and the parah aduma is meant as a kapara for the eagle, so in kategor nasa sanegor, kind of like, right? So therefore, Elazar has to do it. But the Rashbam learns that still, maybe it means it has to be done in the presence of Aaron, and therefore, very well, the shachat oisa lefonav can mean that Elazar shechts the korban in front of Aaron, his father. So there you go. So according to Rav, might understand it that way, or he might just, whatever, we're saying over here, the word lefonav means he shouldn't have hesach hadas. So there you go. So Elazar himself is, in fact, the one shechting it. So the question now is Shmuel. So what about Shmuel? Shmuel knows also that there is this din of Hesach Hadas. So where is he learning it from, if not from Lefanav? He says, so Manole, where is he getting it from? The answer is Nafgale. He learns it from a few psukim later when it says Vesorach as a parah la'enav. It says he burns the parah in front of his eyes. So in front of his eyes, again, means that he has to be focused on it and not distracted by anybody else, by anything else. And Shmuel is saying, once it says it by the burning of the parah, automatically we would know it applies by all the other avodas as well. And therefore, we don't need it to specifically say it by the shechita. Therefore, we can say by the shechita, it means lefanav, means that somebody else is doing it, meaning that it teaches us that somebody else is kosher to shechita. So one second. So the Rav chad b'shchita, v'chad b'sreifa, or tzricha. Rav would say no, it has to say it by both of them separately, and it's necessary. You couldn't have learned one from the other. Because if the Torah wrote it only by shchita, you would say, you know why the shchita has to be done without hesach hadas, mishum detchilas avodah, at the beginning of the avodah, and the beginning of something is the most important thing, and therefore you can't have hesach hadas during the shchita. Aval Srefa, but Srefa is a later process in it. Emaloi, so maybe not. Sricha, therefore it needs to say it by Srefa. And the Ikos of Rachman of a Srefa. On the other hand, if it only said it by Srefa, you would say Mishum Dehashto or the Miskash Rapara. Look, the Srefa is what is now you're fulfilling the purpose that the Parah Aduma is being made for. What's the purpose of the Parah Aduma is to get ashes of it that you're going to be able to use to be a Tahara mess. So now you're accomplishing that. Aval Shchita, but the Shchita is only a one step on the way to that. Emaloi, so you would think that not. Tzricha, and therefore Rav would say you need to say Lefanav and La'enav by both of them. Whereas Shmuel doesn't hold that. Shmuel would hold. You don't have to say it by the beginning. You can say it by the Srefa. Again, because when you think about it, the Srefa is the essential purpose. Everything that you're doing up until that point, the Shchita and the Hazar and the this and the that, is all for the purpose of getting ashes from the Parah Aduma. Therefore, Shmuel would say it would have been enough to say it by it is enough to say it by the Sefer. We can learn from that to every other avoda that they have to be done without Hesech Hadas. Therefore, if it says V'shachat Ois HaLafanav, then the Lafanav teaches us that somebody else could shechit it. Okay. So now the question is, okay, L'ma'uti Mai. Okay, but then in that case, if the Torah is telling us that Hesech Hadas is poisel by these things, then the implication is there's something else in the process of making the Parah Adumah where Hesech Hadas is not poseling it. So what is that? Now, Tosfos says, do we have to assume that there is some kind of mute? So Tosfos explains because like this. After all, even according to Rav that was saying that we have to say it by Shchita and by Sreifa because we couldn't have learned one from the other, but even according to Rav, the Torah could have waited until Asifas Ephra, until the gathering of the ashes, and then put in a word that says that it has to be without Hesech Hadas. And then we would say, once it applies to that, then a Binyan Av would tell us it applies to all the other Avodas as well. There you can't say, it's not the beginning, it's not the first stage, it's not the purpose for which it was all being done. You're not making the Parah Adumah in order to gather the ashes, you're making the Parah Adumah in order to have the ashes. So it could have said it there, by V'osaf Ish Tahar Es Efer HaParah, and we would have learned from it to all the other ones. Therefore, if instead it says it by Shchita and by Sreifa, according to Rav, or only by Sreifa, according to Shmuel, it must mean that the Torah is being mamayik with that there's some other avoida, some other action in the process of preparing the Parah Adumah, where if there's Hesech Hadas, it doesn't matter. So now we have to figure out what that is. So, Ilema Lama'uti Asifras Ephra, Umilui Mayim Lakidush. Are you going to tell me that it excludes the gathering of the ashes, where if somebody is gathering the ashes and meanwhile he's thinking of something else, that it should still be kosher, or that if a person is filling up water to be used for the Parah Adumah water, Lakidush, where he's going to be mixing the water and the ashes? Rashi, by the way, uses the expression over here that he puts the ashes in the keli and pours water over them. Which is how the Lashon HaPasuk implies that way, because it says "Benosan Olav Mayim Chayim Akeli." Tosfos later on in the sugya points out that it's not so. We see from many Mishnayos and Para that it's the other way around. You have the water in the keli first, and then you sprinkle the ashes on top of the water. Anyway, the point is that so the Milui Mayim is filling up water. Kiddush is the process of mixing the ashes and the water together to make Parah Adumah water. So you're going to tell me the pasuk is implying that those things do not require kavana. Those things can be done with Hesech Hadas. What do you mean? They can't. L'mishmeres l'mei nida k'siv. Later on, you have a pasuk that says l'mishmeres for guarding, l'mei nida, for sprinkling water, which implies that you can't have Hesech Hadas until you actually sprinkle them. If you have any Hesech Hadas during any of the processes of preparing the Parah Adumah, then it's going to be puzzle. So you can't. So even while you're gathering the ashes, you can't be thinking about anything else. And even while you're filling up the water, you can't be thinking of anything else. And we're going to see later on, we're also going to discuss the matter of when you're doing some of these things, you're also not allowed to do other malacha. Now, is it that malacha itself passes it because of Hesech Hadas? You're doing some other malacha. That means you're not completely focused on the task at hand. Or is it that there's a special limud from that malacha is possible independent of Hesech Hadas? We'll talk about that later at the bottom of the Yom. Anyway, so again, given as Tosfos is saying that the pasuk mentions this concept of Hesech Hadas only in connection with the Shchita, and the Sreifa, and not, for example, in connection with the Asifa, then it means there must be some other avoida, some other process, some other stage of the process when if there's Hesech Hadas, it doesn't matter. What is that? The answer is when you're throwing in the cedar wood and the azer and the red ribbon, the lab gufa, the paraninu, those are not part of the Parah Adumah itself. So if you have Hesech Hadas while you're doing that, it doesn't matter. It's done earlier, it's done while the Parah Adumah is burning, but because it's not part of the Parah Adumah itself, therefore if he has Hesech Hadas, then it doesn't matter. So when it comes to the shchita and the burning and the gathering of the ashes, etc., all of those have to be done with full kavana, but the throwing in of the eight tzedas and so forth does not. L'mein nida means water of sprinkling. It doesn't mean nida as in a nida, as in a nida, nida or zava, right? The Aramaic word for sprinkle or throw is adi. So it's the same shodesh. L'mein nida means water of sprinkling, yeah. Okay. So that's that. So that's that. So we're saying that Rav and Shmuel are arguing about the Parah Adruma, whether it can be shechted by a Zohar or not, and they're also arguing about the Parah Kohen Gadol, whether it can be shechted by a Zohar or not. So now we're going to have more Amiroyim who discuss the various possibilities over here. By the way, Tosfos discusses the question again. If it says l'mishmeres l'mei nida, then why does it need to say it by shchita and tzreifa? Why doesn't once we say l'mishmeres l'mei nida that anything until the parah adruma water is prepared, then hesach hadas passels it? Anything having to do with the parah adruma itself, automatically that would include shchita and tzreifa, and that would include shchita and tzreifa. And Tosfos goes on to discuss why not. If it said only l'mishmeres l'mei nida, we could have argued that maybe it doesn't apply to shchita, because after all, shchita applies to Chulin as well, and by Chulin, if you have Hesach Hadas doing Shchita, it doesn't matter. You could be doing or saying something else while you're shechting an animal, and it doesn't passel it. So you wouldn't know that applies to the Parah Adruma, and the Sreifa also we wouldn't know that it applies. So therefore we need it by those, and we also need it more generally to be said by all the other avodas of the Parah Adruma. Well, yeah, but throwing on a mizbeach is bringing a korban. He was saying it's not a korban per se, but still, yeah. Tosfos gives a different reason. The reason is because each of the other things, right away, you're getting to something where right away you're able to do hazah. Shchita, right after that, you sprinkle the blood of it. Afterwards, you gather the ashes right away. You can put them in water if you have water available right on the spot there and do azah. As opposed to the burning, you still have something else that has to be done. You still have to put out the fire and gather the ashes before you can use it for part adruma. So therefore, we wouldn't have been able to learn it from the other ones. Okay. So now Itmar, the Gemara says. So now we have more Amiroyim who argue about this. Shchitas para bezar, about the para aduma, if it's shechted with by a zar. Rab Ami Amakshir for Rab Yitzchok Napalm Apsula. So that's the same machloikas as Rav and Shmuel, where according to Rav it's kosher, which is the same as Rab Ami, and according to Shmuel it's posel, same as Rab Yitzchok Napcha. And Ula Amakshir of Amri Lapsula. Ula says it's kosher, the para aduma, if it's shechted by a zar, and some say that Ula said it's posel. By the way, the reason why we got into this in the first place is because we said it's connected with the korbanos of Yom Kippur. But bichlal, since there's no Gemara on most of Seder Zroyim and most of Seder Taras, so the Gemara will often, when we have something in connection with something from those Sdorim, the Gemara will take time to analyze it in detail, because otherwise we're not going to have a different Gemara to do it. Okay. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rabbi Yeshua bar Abba l'sayuri l'rav. Rabbi Yeshua bar Abba pointed out a contradiction on Shmuel from a Braisa, which this Braisa will support what Rav says. That the Parah Adruma is kosher if it's shechted by a Zor. A Braisa says, Einli ela hazos me meha shein kshen b'ishak b'ish. Now like this, when it comes to sprinkling the Parah Adruma water, the Torah tells us, V'lokach ezoi, v'tova b'mayim ish tahor. A man who is tahor should dip the ezoi in and sprinkle. So from that we learn that a woman cannot sprinkle parah adruma water. So now, the Braisa says, Ein li ela hazos me mea shein kshirin v'ishak v'ish. You would only know from that the actual sprinkling of the water, that it's not kosher for a woman to do it like it is kosher for a man to do it. V'ein kshirin ela b'yoyim. And also, the hazar can only be done by day, because the pasuk says by yom hashvi. So we would only know that. Minayim l'rabas shchitasa. How do we know to also include the shchita, the kabbalas dama and the receiving of the blood, the hazaras dama and the sprinkling of the blood in the direction of the Beis Hamikdash, or sreifasa and the burning it, the hashlochas etz eretz ve'ezav shchita las. How do we know that all those things must be done by a man and must be done by day? Tamad lema Torah. Therefore, the Torah tells us Torah zois chukas haTorah. Meaning, in other words, there's one Torah that covers all of the avodas of it. Everything that's mentioned over here, the same rules apply. Continues the Braisa, Yochol Shani Marba Af Asifas Efra Umilu Mayim Bekiddush. In that case, you would think maybe to add also the gathering of the ashes and filling up the water and putting the ashes in the water. Maybe also those cannot be done by a woman, and those have to be done dafka by day. No, Tamad Lema Zois. Therefore, the pasuk tells us Zois Chokas HaTorah. Zois is a mute. So only certain things have to be done by a man and have to be done by day, but not others. That's what we have to figure. Umara Isa Larabas is Elu Lahoitsi is Elu. So what brings us to say that we should include some and not include others? Zois Chokas HaTorah, after all, the word Zois and the word Torah refer to everything. So why, what leads us to say that there's one group that's possible if it's done by a woman and possible if it's done by night and another group that's not? So the Braisa says, Acha Shiribu HaKosav Umiyat, given that after all, the Pasuk is telling us a Ribu and a Miyut. So we have to figure out. So now the Chachamim, in other words, so now the Torah left it up to the Chachamim to figure out on their own which ones are more likely to be included with Zeus and which ones are more likely to be included or excluded because of Zeus and which ones are more likely to be included because of Torah. Rashi uses the expression Ma'ata Lemasara. Now it means Hashem gave it over. Elalei Sbon Ras Emes Vasa Yasher. Hashem left it up to the Chachamim to determine what's the truth and what's the straight logic to use to determine which is which. So Amauta. So you say like this, after all, we're learning it all from sprinkling the water, because there it says clearly Ishtar, and there it clearly says Yoim. So therefore, we have to figure out which parts of the process are more similar to that. So we're saying just like the Hazar of the water is not kosher if a woman does it, and it's not and it's not kosher only by day. Now, all of those are not kosher. All of those are not kosher if a woman does those. And we're going to learn later on where we know that from. Therefore, once we establish that those are not kosher if a woman does them, then we can say by binyan ab, we're going to say also they're only kosher by day. In other words, the rule is going to be anything that cannot be done by a woman with the parah adumah has to be done by day. Anything that could be done by a woman could be done by night as well. Because we're going to learn by a binyan ab from the sprinkling of the parah adumah water, of which the pasuk says both of those things. As opposed to, we're going to exclude gathering the ashes and filling up the water and putting the ashes into the water, those things are just as kosher if a woman does them as if a man does them, as we're going to learn later on. Therefore, they're also kosher if they're done by day or by night. So that was the braisa that Rabbi Yeshua Bar Abba said. So now the question is, behind my tiyuvda, okay, how is this a stira to Shmuel? Where Shmuel says that if the parah adumah is shechted by a zor, it's possible. Are you going to say that since the braisa is telling us the shechita must be done by a man, then you're going to say it means it's also possible with a zor? That doesn't necessarily follow. Prove to the contrary from sprinkling the water. After all, what happens with sprinkling the parah adumah water? We just said a woman can't do it because it says ish to her, but a zor could do it. It doesn't have to be a kohen sprinkle the parah adumah water. Anybody can do it. So there, any man. So therefore, so by the same token, you could say a woman can't shech the parah adumah, but a zor could. That's not a stira on Shmuel. No, so Abaya says rather the stira from this braisa is as follows. Isha my timer. After all, where are we getting the fact that a woman cannot shecht it? The other things, the Kabbalah and the Hazara and so on and so forth, it says a Lazar HaKoyen and a Lazar HaKoyen was a man. But where do we see that the shechita cannot be done by a woman? Because a Lazar v'lo Isha, because the Pasuk says the Shachat Oysa l'fonav. And we're going to say, obviously, the Tana of this Braisa holds like a Rab, that it means that somebody else is watching while a Lazar shechts it. Rab says that a Zor could do it, right? No, the other way around. Shmuel is the one who said a Zor can do it. Rab said, rather, I think I got it backwards before. Let me see. Rav had said that Shchitas Porah B'Zor P'Sula. Yes, I got it backwards before. Okay, so at the top of the Amud, when we had Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchok Napcha and so forth, see, Rav Ami was going like Shmuel, Rav Yitzchok Napcha was going like Rav. I got that backwards. Okay, so Rav says the Porah Adumah is P'Sula that's shechted by a Zor. The Tana of this Braisa obviously agrees with that. Because according to Shmuel, there's no way, there's no particular reason to say when it says v'shachat oisa l'fana, because this is one mean a woman shechting it in front of a lazar. Obviously, we have to be going like Rab, that v'shachat oisa l'fana means a lazar himself has to shecht it and not have hesach hadas during the shechita. So you said l'fana means that he can't have hesach hadas. Right. So the Tana is obviously telling us that a woman cannot shecht it, a laws of Elisha, Zor Nami, a laws of Elisha. Well, by the same token, then this Braise is going to be saying that, is going to be saying, therefore, that a laws of Dafka has to do it, not a Zor. So it's not really, that's why we said Masiv L'Sayuri L'Rav. It's not a stir on Shmuel, because fine, obviously this Braise agrees with Rav, but now at least Rav has, not just his own opinion, now he has a Braise on his side. So it's not a stira on Shmuel, but it's a proof for Rav. So now in this connection, we're going to go further and discuss about the part Aduma. Omar Ula says, "Kala parasha kula." This entire parasha, part Aduma, the one stage after another that we're describing. Mashma motzi miyad mashma u mashma meila. Sometimes you have that there'll be a posik in it where the posik is implying something and moitzi miyad mashma, it comes to exclude what we implied, what we inferred from a previous posik. In other words, sometimes you'll have that the one posik will be telling us something, the next posik will be telling us, don't apply the rule from that previous posik to this one. This one has a new rule. For example, as far as this question of whether a man or a woman is kosher to do it. And sometimes the pasuk is going to be implying that what it says in one pasuk also carries over to the next pasuk. So you're going to have to you can't just tell by reading the pesukim. You have to be able to understand. You have to darshan the phrase by phrase and see which ones is it saying that were telling us what I told you in the previous pasuk only applies to that one, but not to this one. Versus when do we say what we said in the previous pasuk also applies to the current one? So we're going to have to go through the whole parasha pasuk by pasuk and see how we work that out. So to start with. When the pasuk says, "Unasatem oisa el alazar akoyin," the pasuk says you should give it, the part adruma, to alazar akoyin. From that we learn the word oisa is a miyut. Therefore, oisa la alazar, v'lo l'deris la alazar. It means only that one has to be given to alazar, and that one that was first done in the midbar. But in future generations, it does not have to be given to alazar. Alazar again being the sgan, being the deputy kohen gadol. So what does that mean? Some say that it means in future generations, Dafka the Kohen Gadol has to do it. So the first time it was the Sgan, all future ones has to be the Kohen Gadol. The Ikadami the Duris Kohen Hedyot. Others say it means in future generations, even a Kohen Hedyot could do it. Because after all, since the Torah doesn't tell us that the Torah doesn't tell us specifically a Kohen Gadol, so it means any Kohen. So that's the question. The Shleim Lamanda Omel Adoris B'Kohen Hedyot, the opinion that says that a Kohen Hedyot can do it in future generations, Shapir, then fine, I understand why that is, because the Torah doesn't specify. So only by the first one it specifies, so it means only a Lazar, only the Sgan. The other ones doesn't specify, so any Kohen can do it. El Lamanda Omel Adoris B'Kohen Gadol, but the opinion that says that in future generations the Kohen Gadol has to do it, Minole, where is he getting it from, since it doesn't say Kohen Gadol in that parasha? The answer is Goma Chukah Chukah Yom Kippurim. He's going to learn it by Exeter Shabbat on the word Chukah from Yom Kippur. By Yom Kippur, again, it says V'hoysa Lachem L'chukas Olam. And we know that Aaron HaKohen has to do it because it says clearly over there Aaron. So he's going to learn from Exeter Shabbat that the same thing is true as far as the part Adroma, even though it doesn't say so in the Pasuk. Where's the opinion that says that not? Obviously, doesn't agree, doesn't hold of that Exeter Shabbat. We know that Exeter Shabbat, you can't make up your own. You have to have learned from your Rebbeim. So the different opinions over here did or didn't learn this Kabbal Chomer from the Rebbeim. The Ritva, by the way, points out, usually when the Gemara says Ikka da Amri, usually it's different opinions among Amiroyim. Here it's actually different opinions among Tanoyim in a Mishnah in Parah. And he calls it Lashon Zor. It's one of those oddball expressions in the Gemara where it uses that when in fact you have a clear Mishnah that says that you have a machlokes tanoim about it. Okay, so that's the first thing. Next, for Hoitzi Oisa, then when the pasuk continues, he should take it out. What is Oisa, it, as opposed to what else? It means Shalo Yoitzi Acheres Ima. Means you're not allowed to take out another animal together with it. Let's say the part Aduma doesn't want to go. So you're going to think, I'll take along another animal with it, and that way it'll have company, and that way it'll be more willing to go. You can't do that. Kedetnan, as in fact we learn in the Mishnah and Parah. Loi hois a potter roitz a lotzis. If the potter aduma does not want to go out, ein motzian im a shchora, we cannot take out with it a black bull or a black cow. Shaloyem a shchora shach. We don't want people to mistakenly think that they shechted a black one, and of course that's not going to work. The ein motzian im a aduma. We can't take out another red one with it. We don't want people to think that they shechted two of them. And if they were to shecht two of them, it would be possible. So Rashi explains, because that's an example of doing malacha. We said that you can't have hesach hadas. So later on, the Gemara is going to explain that that you're not allowed to do other malacha while you're doing the avodah, so the part while you're doing the various stages of preparing the part of aduma, and this would be malacha because you don't need both of them at the same time, you only need one. So therefore, shechting the other one would be a malacha. So again, so you have a lot of people, so they have to push it along, kind of, but they can't take another part of aduma with it. You can't shech two paras adumas at one time.
Doesn't mean that the kind of brothers do have to take both. One, other people could take one.
Another doesn't matter. We're saying that you can't take another one with it. Right. So again, Rashi explains that it would be a problem of malacha. So here, Tosfos Shishonim discusses the question of now is the problem of malacha, is it a matter of hesach hadas? Is it a matter of that now you're focusing on some other malacha rather than what you're doing? In which case, it might be kosher if you did the other malacha without kavana. Imagine, for example, let's say you did have two animals over there. Let's say you intended to shecht one, but you were using a long knife and accidentally you shechted another one as well. Would we say that's poisel? If you say it's poisel only because of hesach hadas, then that's not going to pass it because there's no hesach hadas. But if you say that malacha is a separate psul of its own, then it will be poisel because the fact is another malacha was done. So Tosfos Yeshanim discusses that point. I think that Rambam paskins that malacha it passels no matter what, but I'm not sure about that. Okay. Anyway, so the point is, so the pasuk says oisa to teach us you're not allowed to take out another animal with it. By the way, also we can't say that in that case if the animal doesn't want to go, we're going to put a rope around its neck and pull it because that's going to passel it because it's not allowed to be carrying anything. Not because of the hairs. No, I mean the Torah tells us that the Parah Adumah cannot have had malacha done with it. Now, malacha, for that purpose, is defined as anything that's not necessary for the animal itself. If, let's say, for example, it was a cold day. So the animal's cold, so you put your coat over it to warm it up. That wouldn't be considered malacha. Now, you're mentioning the two hairs. Yeah, you have the story in the Medrash over there where they were going to buy a Parah Adumah from a goy, and he decided to play a trick and put a yoke on it, and then the two hairs got bent over, and they recognized that. The fact is, they would use that as a simen, but the fact is, we have to know what was placed on it. If a yoke was placed on it for any purpose, even not to do work, then it's possible. Anything else, it depends whether it was done, whether the animal needs it or not. So, for example, you put your coat on it to keep the flies or to keep the cold away, then that would be fine. But on the same thing, let's say, for example, if the animal is wild and you put a rope on it in order to keep it from running away and injuring itself, that would also be fine. But here, you're putting a rope on it in order to pull it. That wouldn't be something that's necessary for the animal itself. Therefore, it would passel it as it's carrying a burden. Yeah. Okay.
Even though you're helping lead it,
but still, yeah. Instead what you do is you get a bunch of carrots and dangle it in front of its nose so it'll walk. I don't know. Okay. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe says, Loi min Hashem huzeh. That's not the reason why you can't take out a second animal. Not because we're afraid that people are going to think you shechted another one or something. Ela mishum shenema oisa labada. Because the posik says oisa, which means you have to take it out by itself. Zeres hakostu. So the question is, v'tanakama haksiv oisa. Nu, what does the Tanakama do with the word oisa? The answer is man Tanakama Reb Shimon. The answer is the Tanakama of this Mishnah would actually be Reb Shimon. The Dorish Taime Dikra. Reb Shimon, in many places in Shas, says that we have to look at the reason behind the mitzvah, and using that, we determine what the parameters of that mitzvah are. The classic example is in that Rashi brings from Bava Metzia. The Torah tells us, V'loy sach vel beged almana, you're not allowed to take the garment of an almana as a mashkin. Now, Reb Shimon says, why is that? Why would there be a difference between an amana and anybody else? The reason must be because since the Torah tells us that, yeah, if the poor person is poor, then you have to return the mashkan every night if it's a blanket, or every day if it's something that they need by day, and then pick it up at the end of the day or at the beginning of the day, then if she's an amana, there's a concern. People are going to think, why are you going to this amana every day? There's some hanky-panky going on. Therefore, the Torah tells us don't do it, which means Reb Shimon says, so therefore, evidently, that wouldn't apply if the amana is rich, because then you can take a mashkan from her and you can keep it indefinitely until she pays back the loan. So therefore, Reb Shimon says that if she's rich, you are allowed to take a mashkan from her, whereas the Chachamim disagree and say, no, the Torah says, loy sach lo beggar amana means period. So we see that Reb Shimon dorish time of dekra. Reb Shimon will take the reason behind the mitzvah and use that to determine when the mitzvah applies and when it doesn't. So the same thing over here, Reb Shimon is going to say, why does it say oisa? Why does it say you should take out only the one animal and not take out another one with it? Because we don't want people to think that you shechted another one instead. So the Gemara says, my binayu, well, new, then what's the practical nafkamina between them? Both Reb Shimon and Rebbe are agreeing that you don't take out another animal. Who cares whether we're dashin and time of decro or not? The answer is, ikabinayu da'ap chamur bahadar. The nafkamina would be, what if you take out a donkey with it? Now, obviously, nobody's going to think that you're shechting a donkey. So according to the Tanakama, according to Reb Shimon, there's no problem of Shema Yoimru, then therefore you'd be allowed to. Whereas according to Rebbe, he says, never mind time of dekra. The Pasuk says oisa, means no other animal. That's it. So therefore, no other animal. And another one, the next. So we understand now what the word oisa means. Next, when it says v'shochat oisa, so when it says v'shachat oisa means, so v'hoitzi oisa mechutz lamachna, v'shachat oisa lefanav, so again it says oisa, so it means shelo yishchet acheras ima, that's where we learn that you can't shecht another animal with it. Again, because that would be, in other words, because it would be malacha, and again, is that a problem of malacha in and of itself, or is it just a problem of hesachadas? But Tosfos Hashanim says, we mean, even in other words, let's say you use an extra long knife, so you're shechting the two of them at the same time, no good. Then when it says lefonav, l'rav means shalo yasiach daiter mena. When it says lefonav, then we had before the machlokes Rav and Shmuel. According to Rav, it meant that the kohen himself has to shech the part adruma, and it just means lefonav just means that he shouldn't have hesach hadas. Well, the Shmuel shehei zor shechet by lazaroya, and according to Shmuel, it means that a zor can shech and a lazar is watching it, because according to him, it's kosher if a zor shecht it. One more, when it says v'lokach elazar akoyin midama be'etzboi, so now why in the next pasuk does it have to mention elazar akoyin again? So this is one of those examples where Ullah says, now we have to be able to tell from the context of the pasuk, is the pasuk telling us the rule that applied in the previous pasuk also applies here, or is it the rule that applied in the previous pasuk does not apply over here? So that's again going to depend on Rav and Shmuel. L'Shmuel la'adur la'alazor. According to Shmuel, who says that a zor could shecht it, so now it mentions a lazor to tell us. But a lazor dafka has to dip in his finger in the blood and sprinkle it. A zor cannot do that. L'Rav having miut achamiut. According to Rav, it's an example of a miut achamiut because the previous pasuk already said a lazor, and Rav understood it meant a lazor dafka has to shecht it. Here it's also saying a lazor, so it's a miut achamiut. Be'ein miut achamiut elo l'rabos. We know that when you have two miutim one after the other, then it comes to be marva. Dafilu koyin hediot. Rav is going to say there, I hold according to the opinion that we said before that the rest of the avoda of the part adoma can be done even by a koyin hediot. There we see it, because here we see, since the Torah says a lazar, and again it says a lazar, so now it means even a kohen head. Tosfos says that, okay, well, so Tosfos says actually that it would mean the taking it out and shechting, we would say has to davka be a lazar. But now, from the Hazar and on, he would hold that even a kohen head could do it. And we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with the continuation of the drashas, going through pasuk by pasuk and seeing what each phrase in the psukim teaches us. In the end, by the way, as far as the machlokes before, as far as the shchita of the parah adruma and of the parah kohen gadol, the Rambam ends up paskening, since we say that shchita is always kosher bazar, then both of them actually are kosher if bazar does them. Even though we had Rav and Shmuel, one saying one and not the other, the other one saying the other and not the one, the Rambam ends up paskening. The fact is, b'di'evid, either way, we never say that there's a shchita that must be done by a certain person, and therefore, in the end, it comes out, it's kosher bazar by both of them, both by the parah kohen gadol and by the parah adoma. Even though chukah, but we're saying that it's not, that shchita is not really an avoda, and we apply that even to the parah adoma. Okay. Yeah. Yes.